Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Get your scores from a guy like me who
like
knows
who?
What it's like to have a grown into
what? Yes, sir. Mike Max, Sports to the Max. Taking you through the evening. Henry Lake at the halftime report, and I'll bring you all the Minnesota Vikings coverage as we see fit here throughout the night. The Vikings and the Washington Redskins. BZ Johnson is an interesting player for the Minnesota Vikings. He'll get his share of balls tonight with Adam Thielen out. I had a chance to visit with him about a number of topics like that. Last week we talked about learning the game and what it's like and all those things, and then you get thrown into the fire, so to speak, for a more extended period of time. What was it like when you get out there and you go, okay, I'm going to be here for a while today?
You know, I prepared myself all week for it, so I can be fit in the game plan at any point, any time in the game. And I obviously knew Adam was down, and it was my time to step up.
I know there's no perfect time for anybody to get injured, but the fact that you're X amount of weeks into the season helps some, doesn't it, in terms of learning the system?
Yeah, it definitely helps. I'm definitely a little more comfortable with the system. I can really just go out there and play and basically understand the defenses more to run my routes better.
Coach Zimmer was talking in the press conference about your ability as you learn the game to the nuances of, you're thinking all the time every play, and every play relates to the next play, and a lot of it has to do with what's this defensive back trying to do to me that I can take advantage of. Is that one of the learning curves that in the NFL as you go through the progression of figuring it out on the fly?
Most definitely, because you can only learn the playbook so much. I mean, that's not going to change. Then it's being aware of what the defense is doing, how they're covering you, if they're playing man, zone, who's blitzing, if the quarterback's going to get pressure. So you just have to really be aware and keep your eyes open.
Kirk Cousins spread the ball around pretty good. I would imagine that keeps everybody really aware on every play, huh?
Yeah, it keeps everybody really aware and everybody really happy. You know, it's nice. It's nice when you can spread the ball out, and it's obviously a tell that the coaches trust all of us.
And if it's a check down kind of thing, if you're the third option, say, on a particular route, how is that different than being a first option? Do you do anything different? Do you look for anything different?
No, you just got to stay with the play, I think. Sometimes guys get relaxed.
You got to be careful of that, right?
Yeah, once a play lasts too long. But, you know, there's always an opportunity to make a play, whether it's a scramble, whether you're the last option in the progression. You know, you want to score, so you might as well wait to get the ball. Yeah.
Everybody wants to score, right?
Everybody wants to score.
That's BZ Johnson bringing you up-to-the-minute coverage. The Minnesota Vikings and the Washington Redskins taking over downtown Minneapolis today. There's something about it. And as long as I've been in this business, I've never grown tired of it. And it's this. Game day. Game day in downtown Minneapolis when it's a big game, i.e. the Vikings or the Twins playing in a big game. But particularly the Vikings when they have a night game, because you have all day. And the people wear the purple. And they come out to downtown Minneapolis, and it doesn't matter what office they're from, whatever it is that they're doing. So many of them have the Vikings purple and gold. Then people that come from all over the upper Midwest. And maybe they stayed last night, or they just got up early and they just wanted to hang out in the atmosphere. But on fall days like this, where it's just cool and crisp and the leaves are still turning and the people are here to see the Vikings, and you can just feel it. You can just feel it in downtown Minneapolis. And it's a vibe like you never get any other time for any other thing. And when I see that, and when I'm out and about, because we have the advantage, benefit of working downtown, benefit and downside is I work downtown Minneapolis. But when I see that and I feel that, it's like, wow, this is really a neat place to live. It's cool that we have all these teams. It's a slice of, Minnesota. And it's pretty neat that in this marketplace that we have all these teams and we have days like this where everybody's excited. The Vikings stay right across the street from us over at WCCOT. I don't know if you even know this, but the Vikings stay overnight at a hotel, even on home games. So obviously when they travel on the road, they're going to stay somewhere, right, the night before the game, the city that they're in. But they also stay overnight in downtown Minneapolis when they have a home game. It's standard protocol in the NFL. It's not just the Vikings. They like to have everybody in the same area. I don't know why they would worry about these guys ever going out the night before a game. That being said, they all stay there. And so some of the overflow, sometimes I see in the streets, and I see these guys as they pull up, and the hotel over there, just it's buzzing because Viking fans kind of know. And then parents of the players stay there, relatives of the players, the friends of the players stay there, and it's on fire. especially like a Saturday night when they're playing a Sunday game. You go over there, everybody's in the bar area, everybody's excited. The players are either, you know, coming and going, or they're up in their meeting rooms, but everybody has that feel that there's a big something coming tomorrow. And that's one of the best parts about having a major league team in your marketplace. It's not just the games they play. It's the build-up to, and it's the getting ready for, and it's all that goes with game day, especially in football, where every game matters so much. Tonight, they're going to put Steve Jordan into the Ring of Honor. I had a chance to visit with Steve briefly before the game tonight, and it's apt that he's here. But he is. Somebody asked me that didn't know Steve Jordan about Steve Jordan. I said, here's maybe the best part about him. He started working on his life after football before he became a football player. So he went to Brown University, came here, didn't expect to make it. Turned out he was a lot better than he thought, and the Vikings thought, made it. But all along, he wanted to be an architect. And he knew that there had to be life after football. And he knew that there had to be something that he could do after football that he would, a real job that he could continue with. And so he got very involved in the architectural business. And he now works for Ryan Construction. Based right, it's a national company, but it's based right here in downtown Minneapolis. And he's been with them for a number of years, but he works out of Phoenix, Arizona. And so he's got the best of both worlds. He's up here often. He knows all the players from Ryan Construction, and just a good guy. And his son Cameron has gone on to huge things with the New Orleans Saints. He's going to be there, I think, tonight. I didn't see him there yet. But he signed recently. It was like a $50 million contract or $60 million contract. And one of the beauties of Steve is he's still the same guy. He still comes back. He's still working. He's still doing whatever it is that he has to do. And he's challenged by his position in life to be an architect. And the reason I say that is so many of the players, the reason that they have a tough time, the reason they end up broke isn't because they didn't make enough money. It's because they didn't take seriously while they were playing that there would be life after football. They didn't truly get involved. They said, yeah, I'll do something. But they didn't know what something was. They didn't find any other passion. And so when the game was over, they couldn't connect to anything. The other part is most of the guys that play Major League sports don't want to have a boss, and they don't want to start from the ground level because they've been in the spotlight and their ego and their pride is so big. So it'd be very hard for them to go over and just relearn some craft or try to learn a craft for the first time. Most of them don't have that in their DNA, and they want somebody to do something for them. But the really good ones are working it all the time. And they don't just work it because they want to have money when they're done. They work it because they understand in life they want to do something productive for society. They want to have something that they can hang their hat on and a place that they can look forward to go to the office. All those things. And the ones that do that do just fine. It's feast or famine, but Steve Jordan's a great example of that. Ahmad Rashad in his broadcasting career. I was down at Fran Tarkington's office last year in Atlanta, and he has a beautiful office. But, he has never quit working. He worked when he was with the Vikings, and he's just kept working to this day, and he gets the biggest kick out of working and challenging, competing against himself and writing books and all those things. Those are the guys that have good lives, and they can trade on their name for the rest of their lives. One of the interesting stories this fall that's evolved has been the Edina tennis team. Because they won another tennis title, girls tennis title, and their head coach, Steve Paulson, who's been with them every step of the way, is retiring after this season. It's been a storied career, and it's been a marvelous career. Anybody that knows Steve Paulson knows he is an unassuming guy, and I don't even know how he's done it. And certainly it helps to be in Edina, and I get that, and you're handed a lot of great players, parents, prepare them at country clubs and everything else, but he's still done a lot of the heavy lifting. And this is his last season. They won the team championship already. And tomorrow they'll try to get an individual champion and doubles champion. But on the other side of this, we'll visit with Steve Paulson, a legend on the tennis circuit, when we come back.
Sports to the Max.
Welcome back. Sports to the Max. News Talk 830 WCCO. How about those Timberwolves? They're back in action tomorrow night right here on CCO. It's a 5:30 pregame. And a 6 o'clock tip-off, the Timberwolves and the Charlotte Hornets after a thrilling one-point win over the Brooklyn Nets last night. There are certain people that are synonymous with excellence. They're always interesting to study as to how they get there. Steve Paulson certainly qualifies because he is excellence. That defines how he has done his job as the girls' tennis coach at Edina. He's retiring this year after putting together a state championship factory out there. Steve's been the architect of much of it, and he joins us now. First of all, congratulations on another one, Steve.
Thanks, Mike. It's been a great, fun year again. So we're excited about it.
Take me back to when you first got the job at Edina. Were you an assistant coach before? How'd you land the job?
Well, I was coaching the boys. I had the boys team from my first 5 years, and during that time, I was approached. The coach actually resigned a couple weeks into the season, so I kind of made room in my schedule along with my brother-in-law Dan James, who was a teaching pro at the time, and we kind of pieced it together that first year. And I've been there ever since. I think that was 1992.
And so, were you coaching boys and girls?
Yeah, so I coached the boys in the spring of 92, and then the start of the girls in the fall of 92, and then I subsequently resigned for the boys. I worked at a country club, and it was getting more and more difficult for the boys. So
sure.
92 was my last year with the boys.
Yeah, a fall season's easier for a country club, right?
Exactly right. Yep, where it's kind of the startup time for the country clubs in the spring. So I had to stop doing that.
I always ask this question to those that have coached both: is there a big difference between coaching the boys and the girls?
Yes, yes. I know. I mean, the boys literally want to strap it on and just go play, and there's a lot of other things that go on with the girls' season, which is great. I thoroughly enjoyed that throughout the years.
But it's just different.
It is. Yeah. It is different. They a little more emotional, a lot more emotional.
You're talking to the father of a daughter who competes in sports, so say no more. I understand the whole thing. I get it.
Indeed. Yeah.
The teaching of tennis in Minnesota, and I guess anywhere, but it's such a year-round sport if you want in terms of club and being able in lessons and access to. Is that, as much as anything, the key is you have to have kids that will compete year-round?
Absolutely. It's the kids that I have, along with many other schools in the area, they play many times during the week, 2, 3, 4 up and more times per week, play tournaments, and they put in a lot of time and effort into their tennis, and I certainly benefit from that.
And when you're coaching at the country club, do you coach some of the same kids that you coach during the season?
You know, I do sometimes. I can get a waiver. The high school league prohibits us from doing that most months, but in the summer we can get a waiver. So I do hit with the kids for a few weeks in the summer.
Because so. that's changed a little, hasn't it? Because I think in basketball and stuff, basketball coaches can now coach their kids in certain summer tournaments, and certainly in football they can with 7-on-7 and different things.
Yeah, so in the summer, like I said, in the summer, but not – it's really June and July that,
yep.
that I can get waivers, with the exception of the July 4th week. So that's always fun to help them during the summer months.
One of the things that people don't see, and myself included, is we see you winning state championships. To have a state championship team year after year, there's a lot of internal competition, and that competition, you know, it all looks good. We look at you on the podium, and you've got the gold and all that stuff. But getting there is, you know, generally speaking, you'll know who your number one player is, and then two maybe. And, you know, in different years, it can become very complicated and gray area as to who's all going to be on the varsity team, make a doubles or a singles competition by the time you get two
sure.
sections. Do you play it off literally, or what kind of a protocol do you use to try to keep it fair?
At the beginning of the season, we do about a week of challenges, if need be. Certainly for the top singles positions, we do that. But over the years, the girls have really kind of bought into my philosophy of, you know, I'm really going to put the players in a position where the team's going to do the best. And sometimes it could be a second or third singles player, second or third best player playing doubles. In this case, Jessica Ipp this year. Played two singles, my second best player a lot of the year, and played first doubles in the championship match. So they are very much accepting their role on the team. That really benefits us greatly.
Do most kids that play at Edina tennis, are they thinking about playing college tennis?
You know, you'd be surprised. There are not very many D1 players in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the state, much less our team.
Yeah.
But we do have a fair amount that either play Division III and or club tennis, some Division II, but There's a fair amount, yeah, that move on to play in college.
Yeah, but you just look at the University of Minnesota. I mean, they're internationally recruiting, right? So if you assume they're going to lock up their home base first, you're competing against the world basically to get one of those spots, right?
Yeah, that's a really hard one for me, because the international players are very good players and they fill a high percentage of the college teams, and in saying that, it really taking away, you know, scholarship opportunities for the USA kids,
yep,
if you will. And you look at even this year, Nicole Copeland, my number one player, has won the state championship the last couple of years. You know, she and actually the last few years, the state champion, Caitlin Merzbacher, ended up playing at the U. She played a little lower to begin with and had a great career there, but it took her a while to get into that lineup. So it's a big challenge with the talent of some of the international players, for sure.
So at what point did you know this would be your last year?
I've been thinking about it for the last maybe 2 to 3 years. And there's never a good break. There's never a good time to do it. But Nicole, my number one player, had been with me for 6 years. My other two captains, Shaylin Rieger and Jessica Ipp, have been with me for 5 years, and their sisters were with me for 4 or 5 years. So it's been a long, wonderful time with those three. I've got a bunch of juniors coming up, which I'm sorry to leave them now, but they're really not a good time. But I thought the time is now. So, yeah, I've been thinking about it for a couple of years.
Well, is it hard, though, to say goodbye to something that you become that attached to?
It was unbelievably hard. I was pretty emotional. I talked to my athletic director, say, on a Friday, I think it was, the following Monday, I told them. I told the captains first, and it was very emotional for me, because I've known them for a lot. Shaylin Rieger, I think I've known her since she was three. Her sister played, and she's been on the court, and both Nicole and Jessica, known them for a long time. So, yeah, it was extremely difficult.
But I would think when you make that decision, I would think you don't realize how big a part of it is until you – it's kind of like you open a vault, because all that stuff kind of gets compressed down, and you don't realize what a big part of your life it is until you say, this is it.
You know, it truly has been overwhelming to hear from many people, and I've tried to stay on course as far as our team and getting lineups and trying to get our team ready. And yesterday it really started to hit me with all that's been involved with over the 28 years and all the people. It's been so cool to hear from everybody else, from former players and parents, and it's really been overwhelming, but I love it. It's been awesome.
Yeah, I would imagine the pictures and the memories just come flowing, huh?
They do, and I've seen many throwback pictures.
Yeah,
back when I had hair and yeah, a few other things, but it's fun to hear from those people. I've had great conversations with players from yesteryear, and I think more to come. So it's great memories, certainly.
I don't know. Have they named your replacement?
No, not yet.
Okay, like, yeah, forgetting who it is, what advice would you give them based on what you've seen?
Be open and honest with the kids.
Even the tough stuff, huh?
Absolutely. Open lines of communication. The parents are get a bad rap sometimes, but they are wonderful. They are so supportive of their kids, and really try to understand what they're going through. I mean, it's a different world now with social media and really try to communicate with each of the players on a one-on-one and understand their needs, certainly.
Yeah, because each person and each parent sees it through that kid's eyes.
Yeah, but everybody has different needs too, and different strengths and weaknesses, and to understand those and putting the players in the best position for each player to succeed is paramount as far as a coach goes. I think that's sometimes difficult. A lot of coaches want to play the cookie cutter role where they're trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, I know.
Different.
I got to say something on that, along those lines. The same is true in education. I think we're starting to learn that every kid learns different.
Absolutely.
You know, and we're finally starting to figure it out. And as much as, you know, the easy way is to just to teach them the 3 hours the way, whatever way we want. And what we're finding is, and that's why there's been so much room for other schools, is my kid learns at a different pace than your kid, and my kid enjoys math but doesn't enjoy English or vice versa. And it doesn't mean that one's dumber or less passionate than the other. It's just that, and I know that I don't mean to put the onus on education because I think it's really hard to do this. But you know, trying to figure out what makes each kid tick is almost got to be the goal. And we do it in sports probably better than we do in the classroom because we get to know the kids better.
Yeah, I've had many conversations with my wife. My wife's a teacher, a wonderful one at that. And she teaches elementary school. And we've had great conversations because that's exactly right. It's trying to find different ways for different kids to learn. And they learn at different rates. And understanding the kids is what it's all about. So you can parlay the right information, the right teaching technique for that.
Yeah, because I think the worst thing in the world is you lose a kid because they become disinterested because they don't think they're smart and they don't realize that they've got this tremendous potential and gift that maybe nobody's unveiled to them yet.
Yep. Yeah, I know Jody, my wife, works really hard at that trying to get them to play their strengths, so to speak.
Yeah, and it's easy for me to say from 900 feet. It's just, you know, it's a simple observation. What do you think is the most important ingredient to being a great tennis coach?
That's a tough one. I know that that's a tough one. Being well, open and honest with the kids, and I guess accepting the players that they are. Putting them in a position to succeed. I hate to keep going back to that.
You know, but what's funny when you say all those things is that that's not one X or O there. That's not about backhand. That's not about forehand. It's about things outside of what we would think are the teaching tools that you'd use to win, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, the X's and O's truly, you know, some players like to be aggressive and just personality wise. They're going to want to come forward and play a little bit more offense and come to the net and play quicker points. There are others that want to sit back and play longer points and trying to teach that and trying to let them do their thing to their maximum ability is what it's all about.
Steve, we appreciate it very much. I appreciate all the time over the years that you and I bump into each other and see you, you know, either at the health club or doing a story with you, etc. Nothing but the best, but congratulations on just an unbelievable career and all the people that you influenced along the way.
Thanks a lot, Mike. We really appreciate all that you do for our team and tennis, but high school sports in general. We can't thank you enough. So thanks for having me on.
You bet. Steve Paulson, right. Boy, Hall of Famer. That's pretty rare air that he lives in there, coaching the Edina tennis team and all that goes with it. And I'm sure the challenges are many. You know, we always think about the challenge, the ultimate coaching challenge, is to take a team that's not very good or a program that's not very good and change the culture. That's, to many of us, that's the ultimate, right? If you can do that, that is an incredible gift or accomplishment or whatever. If you can take a team that's not winning and turn them around so that they win, we look at that as the ultimate. Truth be told, in some respects, the mission of doing that is easier than having a successful team every year because the mission is really simple. You can identify why you're not successful. You can't do this, and you fill in the blanks. We can't, you know, if it's football, we can't run the ball. Okay, then we need to have a better offense. We either need to get better offensive linemen or we need to get them in the weight room longer or we need to get better coaching techniques so we can run the football. That's the mission. But it's not that hard to identify that because you can see your failures. They're really easy to see what's happened to you. Or we can't defend the pass. Well, then we need to come up with a new defensive scheme or we need to get guys that are faster playing in the secondary. Or maybe we need to take this running back that's a backup and play him at cornerback and then we'll have a better pass defense. See what I'm saying? That's not that hard for any coach that's got even an average intellect to grasp and to be able to apply. He knows what needs to be done. He knows what's applicable, and they go about it. Whether they can get that done or not is a different question, you know. But to figure out what it is that needs to be changed, that's really not that hard that often. But when you have a team that's successful, you constantly are trying to figure out how to evolve and tinker without losing what you already have. On top of that, as I mentioned, you've got a tremendous amount of people that are on your bench or that are close to being starters that aren't playing that somehow you have to get to feel good about the process and being part of the team. So you have to convince them that they're an important part of the team. You know, I always hated it when people would say, just because you don't play in the games, you're still a very important part of the team because you make those starters better during the week. And without you pushing them, I always thought, well, that's just a camouflage, and that's, you know, who can feel good about that, right? Your role is to try to make the starters better, you know? And I don't know that you have to feel good about that role, but you have to feel like you have a sense of purpose and there's a reason that you're out there and that you get something out of the sport that you're in. And sometimes when you're on a really good team, you might not play significant minutes even though you're a good player. And you might be better than players on other teams that are playing a lot. And somehow that coach, and this is what I say about successful programs, why it's harder to be a coach of a successful program, is you got to convince that kid that just because they're not playing at crunch time or they didn't make the section team, whatever it is, that they're still really good and they still have an upside left or whatever, especially if they're underclassmen, and they can still do great things. And that's kind of what Steve Paulson has to deal with every year. Now most people would trade places with him in a minute. Most people would say, give me that pressure, give me that problem versus trying to get kids just to come out for the team. I get that. I understand exactly what you're saying. But I do think there's a certain pressure with that we probably don't give enough respect to. We probably don't appreciate the coach that can do that as much, because we feel like, well, that coach has it all. That coach has been given this much. They got a great team. They got no complaints. We're sitting over here and we don't have enough tennis rackets to play. Whatever it is, and that's why it's so important for coaches to be incredibly honest with themselves in asking one question: did I do the best at getting the most out of this team? Forget the record. Forget where you ended up in the standings. Did I do the best at taking what they gave me, however hard they worked in the offseason, whatever it was that they did? Did I do the absolute best at getting the most out of them? And if not, what could I have done differently? And number two is there something in the offseason that I could have done to inspire them so they'd work harder before the season? But that has nothing to do with your final record. It has a lot to do with the community that you live in, the parents of the kids that you have, and what kind of programs they have growing up that they're sending you these kids from. So that's just a little word from the wise. Now, why this World Series is so cool, next.
Sports to the max.
Time now for Old Dutch High School Athlete of the Week. His name is Nick Hand. Yes, give a hand to Nick. Why do I say that? Because he plays football at Totino Grace. He's a junior. After being unable to pick off any passes in the season's first seven games, guess what he did? Hand had three interceptions in the final game of the regular season, a 26-20 win over Creighton Durham Hall. He returned one of his three picks, 60 yards. That's a good night, Nick. Nick, who is the second leading tackler on the squad, and his Eagle teammates will open the Class 6A playoffs Friday night by hosting Forest Lake. Congratulations to Nick Hand. For what? For being this week's Old Dutch Quality Athlete of the Week. For more information on all the Old Dutch Quality Athlete of the Week winners, go to olddutchfoods.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.